Hello, and welcome to Goat Homeschooling with Erin and Amanda. This is Amanda today. Erin's out and about doing her thing, but today we've got Kate Curley with us with Game Schooling. I'm so excited.
Welcome to Goat Homeschooling with Erin and Amanda. I'm Erin.
And I'm Amanda.
This is the podcast to encourage moms that have been at this homeschooling gig longer than 5 years and plan on sticking with it through the high school years. The long haulers, as we like to say. We want to help you have the greatest of all time homeschool that meets the needs of your family by encouraging you with real conversations on the issues that pop up as you've been in this homeschool lifestyle for years.
So it'll be fun to try and see if there's people out there that need the encouragement and if there's anything that we can do to help others as they get started on their journey. That'd be awesome. That's what we're here for. So welcome, Kate.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being here. I'm so excited. I was telling her before we started recording, I'm such a fangirl. I've been following you since, we said, what, 2014?
We think. So, the math is right.
It doesn't feel like, when you say the year, it doesn't feel like it's that long ago. But man alive, that's a long time ago. And you were the thread that we held on to through so many years of being dragged and kicking and screaming into homeschooling. And well, a lot of what you said resonated with me. And so I really appreciate you. So sorry, I was saying thank you for that. And if I totally fangirl and get awkward, just forgive me.
I'm eternally awkward, so don't worry. But I'm glad that it could help. It's funny to me that anyone ever read. It was not the intention to like have a blog or be a blogger or anything. So it's still every now and then just it's funny how life is.
Right.
So I'm glad it could help.
Yes. And, you know, and essentially, you know, it's evolved for me into being able to help other people. You know, I was with GHF for a while on their board and helped them, and then doing this podcast. And so just trying to be of an encouragement to other homeschoolers. And so, and you helped plant that seed into where we all are now. And so just to know that you have a ripple effect there, that there's a lot of people that you don't even know that you're helping. And so keep that live. Save that website, even if you're not using it anymore, because people could still use it to refer back to.
Thank you.
We can start with talking about your story. How did you get into homeschooling, and what were you before, and how did you go in, and how far did you kick on your way to homeschooling?
Yeah, sure. So I was a school psychologist, and I loved worked in Boston and some of the cities around Boston, and urban education was and still is one of my passions. And I always pictured, you know, one of the reasons why I went into education was I knew I wanted to have a family, and I knew that I could, you know, have that those mother's hours while doing something that I was still like really interested in and passionate about. So I always envisioned my kids would be, I'd be home with the kids. And then when they were school aged, I'd go back and I'd work in urban ed. And then our oldest, I should back up and say, I live in New Hampshire with my husband and I have three kids. They're currently 14 and a half, 13 and 11. And my oldest at the time was in kindergarten and he was having a really, really rough year in kindergarten. And I am a public educator. I believe in public schools. I know that there's a place for them. It doesn't work for everybody. It's not a perfect system, but we moved here for the school district. It's a good school district, and I just always assumed my kids would go there. And he was the kid who came into school reading. He was reading Harry Potter. He was reading Lord of the Rings. But he also was a whirlwind. We called him our tornado full of boy. He was just never stopped moving. He had a lot of sensory stuff happening. He is to this day very impulsive, and the words would just like fly out of him and he just couldn't stop. So he was always shouting out answers and interrupting and falling out of his chair and all of that stuff. So he didn't present as the most academic, you know, the best student perhaps, but he was really, really smart. And he was bored. It sounds weird to say, but it's just he was bored in kindergarten. And I thought that the school system would be able to work with us. And so we got him evaluated outside of the school district, because being a school psychologist and having trained, I was at Tufts, which is a great school, and we did not have a lot of training on how you assess kids who are gifted, let alone kids who are gifted and have special needs, which is called twice exceptional, which he is. And so I researched constantly doing the ed research, and I found some resources in our area, and I found a psychologist upstate who was able to test him. loved him. To this day, we are still in contact with him. He, at that time, told him that the testing was the best, told us that the testing was the best day of his life. But I remember her coming out. So it's kind of a unique situation. She was having work done on her home, and it was, and she tests out of her home. She works in school part-time and does outside testing. And she came out to my car. She kept coming out because she gave him tons of breaks. So the kid was constantly, and she has like farm animals. He was in trees. He was hanging off of like, you know, tractors. He was having a blast. She had barn kitties chasing them around. And she came out probably maybe the fifth time she came out, and she was like, I don't even need to score this to tell you that what you need to do right now is to look up Davidson Young Scholars Program because he's going to qualify. And she went back in to test him, and I looked it up, and it is a program for profoundly gifted kids who are in the 99th or above cognitively. So essentially, he was this boy who was, at the time, I knew to get him tested right at six, or six, one month, as close to six as possible, because that's when the cognitive testing that you use goes from the preschool age to the upper level. So what he was being tested with as soon as he could statistically like be tested at was what you would give a 16-year-old in high school. So he was tested on the same thing. And he was not hitting the ceilings that a 16-year-old would hit on cognitive testing. So I'm getting chills even like saying it, because it was a very emotional and very lonely place to be, because people think of gifted as this thing that it isn't really. It's so much more complicated. And especially, I think we were talking before, I feel like in those early years, it was so much harder than it is now, because he presented as this little kid who, you know, he had this, he understood things that he probably shouldn't have at that age, but his emotions were six-year-old emotions. So he would get so upset about anything, like extinction. Like if the dinosaurs went extinct, that means that we could go extinct, and it could be, and the sun's going to burn out, and like all these various fears that he, I mean, before the pandemic he was in, this is like funny, not funny, but in 2019 in January, he was afraid of global pandemics of a respiratory nature.
Of course.
Because my husband is a pulmonologist, and he works in the ICU, and he was reading about crossover of viruses between animals and people, and how scientists were saying it's just a matter of time before it happens. So, I mean, he did great with it. We were out of counseling and everything. And our therapist, when we were locked down in March, who we hadn't talked to in many months, called me at home and was like, just so you know, we are booked out solid, but I thought of you first. And if you need to get in, you just call me. And
oh my gosh.
Because he was like, Mom, I told you.
Told you so. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's like, you know, it gets easier in many ways as they get older, because they, you know, anyone who knows him or spends 5 minutes with him knows that he's a really unique kid. But when they're 5, 6, 7, 8, and they're melting down, and you're having to like underarm them out of public places because of some thing that's like too hard to explain to someone in Target.
Right.
You know, it just doesn't, it's not.
Oh, he's gifted. No, it's not a gift.
It's not a gift.
I'll take it back. Yeah. I'm taking it back.
So, yeah. So anyway, the psychologist was like, I've been working in New Hampshire public schools forever. You could try to go in the public school. He'd have to be radically accelerated. Your school district is probably not going to go for that. Most don't. If you put him in private school, you're going to be paying for the same problems. And charters are kind of hit or miss. She was like, honestly, what I've seen the most success with is people who just take it. She was like, try not to think more than 6 months in advance. And if that's too hard, a year. But she was like, he would be best suited in a homeschool situation. And I just thought that it was going to be, I mean, and then we had a horrible meeting with the school. I was like still holding out hope that like they would see and be like, oh, you're right. But they kept telling me he's in the perfect cohort. And I was like, no, he isn't. Anyway, so we ended up homeschooling, and I had never planned on it. And then my daughter was, they're two grades apart, 19 months apart. So she was in kindergarten. He would have been in, what, second grade? And she wanted to come home about it was around this time of year, like November, December. She was like, we're not playing as much anymore. And they're just teaching us our letters. Like when we first got here, we played a lot and we were getting to know each other and we read lots of books. And now it's more of like we're at our desk more. So she wrote this whole manifesto about how she wanted to come home. So we took her home. And then my youngest, he was in a play-based preschool that they all went to. And I was actually on the board of the preschool this first year that I was trying to figure out homeschooling. And, you know, we all had sensory stuff. He didn't want to wear pants at that phase. It was like his pantsless phase. So it would be like wrestling him into pants to get him to school for like 2 hours, interrupting a homeschool day, and then no sooner like go pick him up. So at one point I was like, you guys, I love the preschool, but like, why am I sending him and paying for it? So we
just
pulled
him out in his underwear all day. Yeah.
Never, but I know. And then he was fine. It took like, you know, 5 months. He was over that phase and he wears pants now, thankfully, at 11. Not an issue. But so he's like never been in school. So we homeschooled and it was wonderful. I started writing just purely. I was writing at My Little Poppies because my friends who worked in Boston with me thought it was a cool story. And they were like, we'd really love to see where this goes. Can you just keep us updated? And I was like, oh, I'll just get on Blogspot. And like, I figured out how to do that. And I was basically writing to them. And it was really terrible at first. But then we started to form this community of people who had, I don't think a lot of people were writing about it. I think it's hard to write about in a way that, I don't know. But I just started writing about it. And I found a community of people who were writing about it. And it just grew into this, you know, you were connected with these people who had kids. You know, you felt seen. Mm-hmm. And so we did that for a while. Over the years, it got harder to write about the day-to-day quirkiness stuff as they got older, because it's really not fair. You know, it's one thing when they're toddlers, but when they get older, they don't want their mom writing about them. So it got a little trickier. So I wrote more about homeschool things that work for gifted and twice exceptional kids.
It'd be so hard to write about that sort of stuff and not be cynical and not be negative. Like, I think that would come out of me if I started writing about how my kids were, because it's so hard. Like you were saying, it's so easy to be negative and, you know, you were able to find kind of lighten it up and make it a positive experience. And I think that's probably the way that you were able to inspire so many people and really grow that, because I would be negative Nancy. I'm like, this is what you need.
Well, yeah. I really thought that we would. I mean, he was a lot at that age. That was the hardest he's ever been, and most challenging, I should say. And I thought we were going to drive each other crazy. That's why I put him in piano. Everyone was like, you're so smart to put him in piano early, but he always loved music. So I was like, that's 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. That I am not with him, where I could just sit in the car and have a cup of coffee. So, yeah. I mean, it was a lot early on, but homeschooling, looking back, he started high school this year at the public high school. And so far, I mean, it's only December, but so far it's going really well and he's enjoying himself. I don't know how much he's learning, but he's having fun and he's making friends and he's in sports and stuff. But I'm just so grateful that he had the time to be outside. He was a kid who has always been a kid that needs nature and needs to be running around outside. And I feel like that taught him, and I think it helped a lot of the anxiety stuff early on. It just taught him that that's like a coping that he can turn to. And now he's so active in scouts and he's camping like almost every weekend. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he went to Canada. There was a time where I never thought he would like be out of my vision, because he was so nervous all the time. But he went to Canada himself this summer with Boy Scouts and had a blast. So
that's awesome.
I mean, it just gets easier. That's what I want people to know. Yeah. Not, it's different. It's still challenging, but easier than those early years.
And you're still homeschooling your youngest, right? Mm-hmm. Are there plans to ever put him into public school?
He's not sure. He goes back and forth. So I was talking to the kid. So every year, we assess, like just like the psychologist said, what we're going to do. And I always give the option, if you want to go back, you can. And my daughter is always the one that's on the cusp, because she's always been the most social. And so in the summers, we see a lot of our public school friends who were friends and when we were at the play-based preschool. So she's known them forever. But we all go to the same place that has a pool. So they're all together all summer. And so by the end of every summer, she's always thinking. Like every year, I'm like, she might go this year. This year it started before summer hit. So I was like, I think this is the year she's going to go. And timing wise, our school is a cooperative district. So there's two towns coming together for middle school. and middle school starts in seventh. So it was a really good time if she wanted to go because she looks like the other, like every town is thinking she's the other town. She doesn't stand out as like the new kid.
That's nice.
My youngest has talked about maybe doing that next year because he would be seventh grade. But then he goes back and, I mean, he's having a blast this year. He's like, Mom, we can just do whatever we want. You know, last year was challenging because as the kids get older and the hormones hit, they sleep a little later and they're a little slow going. And the day was just taking forever to get stuff done, where we used to be done by like 11:30 and then we could go on a field trip. So We're back to him being in charge of his time and doing what he wants. So it's been really fun for him. And I think it's nice as the youngest to have that one-on-one time that maybe they didn't get as much of
early on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every time I suggest or have suggested to my kids, you know, you could go back, you could go to public. Mm-hmm. They're like, nope. Nope. What, you're crazy. Nope. That's not happening, Mom. You know? So my older son that's turning 19 next week, he has severe anxiety and selective mutism. And so when he was, you know, it was the same year that he was diagnosed that his fourth grade teacher said, there's only so much we could do as a school. And so we could take him out to test him, but then that causes anxiety because he's walking out in front of the classroom. We could tell him to not listen to the timer for a test, but then the other students are going, why does he not have to have a timer when everybody else does? And, you know, so no matter what they did, in her view, no matter what they did, he would because and school itself was an anxiety provoking thing for him. And so it's been incredibly debilitating for him. He's also very brilliant, but he's an introvert. And so people, like, you know, you said when someone talks to your son for 5 minutes, they know that he's a unique kid. And if someone would talk to my son for 5 minutes and he would actually talk back, then then they would know that he's a kid. But you have to get him to do, you have to like talk about something that he's interested in, and then you won't shut him up. You know, like he's just going to go on and on. But it's hard to pull that out of him, you know, and sometimes he will use words. We were like going somewhere last week and he used a word that I had to take a double take on. Even at 19, I'm like, I have to Google that. What is that word? You know, like, there is some brilliance there. And, you know, my dad was, had schizophrenia. But when he was in the Assisted Living Place, he's talking about how they're going to be able to use people's DNA to bring them back to life. And like, had this really outlandish, like you're talking about your son doing these things. And I was telling that to a friend of mine and she goes, no, they're really studying that. And I'm like, no, shut up. No, they're not. Like, you know, so they're with these gifted kids. Sometimes they can say things, even if our listeners don't have gifted children, but they might know someone at their co-op or know a friend's child, that they say things that really concern you, where like you're worried about their mental health. But don't always go there with it. There might actually be some validity to it. And us normies are like, what are they talking about? There's got to be something wrong here. When there's really not, there's just brilliance tucked away in there. My younger son has massive sensory issues and he's sensitive to a lot of things and didn't sleep through the night until he was 7 years old. He was attached to my hip, you know? And so taking him to kindergarten, he had the lights and he had the sounds and he had the, you know, all of the things. And that was really hard for him. He was so excited to learn, though. And so, like, there were no tears on first day. But by Christmas, there were tears because, you know, his fine motor skills were very low. And he was in the fifth percentile for motor skills. And so you're talking about this emotional, this asynchrony is certainly there. But at six, he's watching YouTube videos about gravity holding his stuffed dog under his arm and drinking milk out of a sippy cup. You know, like everybody's watching stuff on gravity. So anyway, that's just one of those things that I really see us in common in that way. And there's a lot of people that have kids like that, that it doesn't dawn on them that there's something unique there and there might be something worth investigating. There was a book that I really liked called The Spark. And I read that so quickly. I'm sure you probably, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. But, you know, the mom in that, the mother, I forget her name right now, but she, when she was writing this, she was talking about encouraging their strengths. So if our listeners have children that are like this, where they have sensitivities, where they have emotional imbalances is what it feels like, then we can still encourage their strengths. And those things that are not quite there yet, that'll come. You know, like what you're saying, as they get older, it does get easier. But yeah, we certainly empathize with those that have littles that are like this, for sure.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to say, we had a lot of sensory stuff too, but I have a soft spot in my heart for kids with selective mutism. When I was in preschool, I had two friends who had it, and I actually was going I think my parents could afford 2 days a week, and the preschool offered to have me go the whole week because I was like the translation person.
Oh, I love that.
And then when I worked in Boston, my first counseling case was a girl with selective mutism. Mm. So I always feel like I should have done more with that.
Yeah. He would always do this thing with his hands. So he'd have his hands down by his sides when he was feeling that. And he would rub his fingers through his thumbs. And then the only way he could communicate was to shake his head. Mm-hmm. So so teachers thought that he was obstinate, you know, that he just was insubordinate, wouldn't talk, you know. His kindergarten teacher, our parent teacher conference, his kindergarten year, it was only scheduled for 30 minutes and it lasted 2.5 hours.
Wow.
Because the teacher was so adamant about telling me the things that he was or was not doing that no one else was or was not. So, you know, I've been doing this for 25 years and I've never seen a child do this and with a negative connotation. Mm-hmm. And of course, at the time I didn't know. Looking back, of course, hindsight's 20/20. Had I known then what I know now, I would have ripped him out of there right then. But we stuck it out another 3 years. And
I say the same thing about kindergarten. We used to get a white slip every day. It was only half a day. And he would come home and still nap because he was so busy that he didn't sleep great, but he napped. And he would get a white slip because the idea was that they weren't telling you what they did in front of the child. It was supposed to be more positive. It was every day. It was a white slip, and he knew.
He was reading
and
he could read it.
Mrs. So-and-so doesn't like me. And I should have, I always think about when you were in education, they always said at least there should be 5 positive things for every negative statement that you make about any kid. Like if there's any sort of challenge, you should be able to find 5 positive things to the kid. When you talk to the kid, your interaction should have 5. It was 5-to-1 or a 4-to-1. And I just felt like he was just clobbered by her. And I think she also had, I think there was more, I think there are certain kids that push teachers' buttons. And I think that he was just that type of personality, because I know that she was a phenomenal teacher for many of my friends' children. So I think it was just he was a hard kid. And I would say to her, just give him a book. If he's driving you crazy, just give him a book he's never seen before. And that's not hard. It doesn't cost anything. And he would shush. He would not, to this day, if I want him to be quiet, I would hand him a book he hasn't seen before. He cannot resist it. So,
but that's not a policy. You know. That's not in the policy manual, though. Okay.
No, you can't. He's supposed to be listening.
Right. How do I know he's listening if he's reading a book? Oh, trust me, he is. He knows exactly what's going on.
That was the year that Frozen came out. And I remember my friend was at an IEP meeting and he got in trouble because there was one day, I forget what they were doing, but he sang the Frozen soundtrack at the top of his lungs because he was really into singing at the time. He's not anymore. But my friend was at an IEP meeting and I had said something in a group text about he got in trouble for this today. And she was like, oh my gosh, I heard that. I heard it. And then he was like, Mom, Mrs. So-and-so was wrong. I wasn't singing the soundtrack. I was singing the soundtrack in reverse order. And he was even doing the classical. He'd be like, "Me, I don't remember the, but so annoying. So I can see, that's why I was I'm going to have to be home with them all day. What are we going to do? But, if you let them run and go outside and just break it up, and it's easier for them, they're happier. That's the other thing, is they're so much happier if they're having trouble in school for whatever reason, and anxiety, and coming home can be a lot easier than you think it's going to, even if you
know. 100%. Absolutely. And, we just moved to the country 3 years ago. So we moved from suburbia to rural area, and we have 20 acres now and lots of animals, and my youngest sensory kid, total sensory and needs to go outside. He'll say, I'm going to go adventuring. Even at 14, I'm going to go adventuring. And he goes back to the back pasture, or he goes and plays with the chickens, or he goes and he's able to get that imaginate, he's still very imaginative, and he's able to, use his imagination, and he's not bothering anybody. He's running around out there with Nerf guns and swords and pretending and making up stories and finding things and learning things about trees and bugs and plants and stuff. And he's out of my hair. So I am
so important all for it. All that play.
Yes.
Yeah.
All for it. Okay. So game schooling. So what started you in game schooling? What does it mean? How do you do it?
Sure.
For people that don't know. Yeah.
And so I'm a gamer at heart. I've always loved games. Like going back to being really teeny tiny, it was always what I got my friends to do and at family gatherings and everything. My siblings were not into games and were very, had lots of big tempers. So I was always very excited to find someone else that could play. So I inherited all of our family's games because the other two didn't want them. So I had a closet before, you know, game closet before I even had an apartment or anything. But I just always loved games and I've always worked with children. So I was a nanny, a tutor, a lifeguard. I don't even know, but I would play games with kids all the time. And I just knew being in education and studying child development and being kind of a big kid myself, I just knew the importance of play and how it's essential and that we know that it's essential for itty bitties, but that it's really good for everybody. Like if you look at the research, it's even good for grownups. You can see some companies like Google incorporate play into the workplace and people are generally happier. There's been a ton of studies. So it was just always something I did. And when I was working in urban education, I was working with pre-K through 12th grade, whole district, each city I worked in. And you didn't have a ton of time to connect with a kid because there was just such a big caseload. But I found that either reading aloud, even with teenagers, like if you took like Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day, and you read that to them, they would be like rolling their eyes at first, but then they'd be like, you know, listening. And games were something like, you know, just going outside and shooting hoops or playing checkers or something or playing Uno was a way for kids to, you know, keep their hands busy, but they're able to talk to you without making eye contact. It's kind of like, I liken it to like having teens now and driving in the car, and it's the car when they're not looking at you that all the stories come out. Mm-hmm. It helped to connect. So it was just kind of like a no-brainer for me just to do that with my oldest because I just love games. And I think it helped him. I know it helped him work on a lot of the things that he struggled with them. He was a really intense younger kid. He was very competitive. He didn't like to lose. He wasn't necessarily the best team player at that time. So I feel like even our really ugly game schooling moments, which we had many of them, really helped him to, I mean, we think of game schooling as covering many people who are attracted to game schooling have a kid who is not learning well in traditional ways. So whether that's school or you have boxed curriculum and it's working for your other two kids, but you have this one kid that just is fighting you on everything, it can help you academically and it will help you academically, but it works everything. It works socially, emotionally, all those social skills, like the, you know, getting along, reading directions, waiting your turn, you know, negotiating with someone, interpreting rules and coming to an agreement when they're not clear. Mm-hmm. All of those things are things you're going to be doing in your adult life. And how great that you can coach it in real time with little kids. And just, it can be very ugly early on, but if you stick with it, it's so good. And now I have kids who will ask to play games that I love playing and some that I don't. But it's just, I think it's so great to be able to have that, you know, thing. I think when they're out of the house, they'll look back and that'll be something they think of. Mm-hmm. Like, I think play is just something that you're never going to regret doing. And the more you do it, the more you realize, like, I have so many stories of like, oh, so-and-so learned to read doing that. And this person learned, mm-hmm. like, got less worried about writing playing this game. And this person, I mean, my daughter learned to tell time playing a silly little clock game. It was just something that wasn't sticking for her. And we played it one afternoon and it was just like mm-hmm. that. There's just so many. My boys are obsessed with World War II because they were playing Memoir 44.
Yes. Our kids would all be friends. Yes. Axis and Allies. Yes. My youngest, his favorite is Axis and Allies. Yeah.
And Risk. Those are the ones I don't love. I'm like, can you play that together? No, but I will play if they really want me to. But
Monopoly, never again.
Yeah. No. So it's just become something that I just really want homeschool parents to know that we're not in school for a reason. It didn't work. So it's okay to create the homeschool that you want, like it deep down in your heart that you feel like we shouldn't be fighting this. Not that you're not going to fight because you will, but you know, like things are just harder than they should be. I feel like we put too much pressure on ourselves and it could be a heck of a lot easier. And that if you just incorporated a little bit of play and you trust your gut with that, much like we do with homeschooling in general, we're always worried, like, did we do enough? Are they going to, if they had to suddenly go in public school right now, would they be behind? Like things mm-hmm. like that, the questions we have. if you stick with it and you listen to your gut, there are so many. I ended up creating a community. We had a community on Facebook for game schoolers, and then the internet just got kind of mean.
Imagine that. Basically. I'm shocked by that.
Before. When play groups are fighting with each other, you right. know that the internet is ugly. So I opened like a off Facebook community, and the stories in there are just incredible of these, you know, almost every parent has a kid who has unique learning needs. I mean, we all do, but you know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. they don't fit in that traditional public school box. And they have so many stories about how play worked for mm-hmm. this reason and that reason. And even we have a mom whose husband just like gamified their chore chart. And I thought it was amazing. Like, I want to do the same thing. They can level up if they do some, you know what I mean? It's just,
yes,
it's yeah. just, it can be so much fun. Not always perfect, but it just, I highly recommend game schooling. And just above that, just play-based learning in general. And I know as kids get older and you're in the teen years and everything, you can feel like, should my kid be spending an hour outside, you know, building that thing? Or
yes, but it is. Yes.
It's important. Yes.
Yes. Yes, yeah. They should. Yeah. Game schooling, when you first came out with it, I don't know why this is, maybe it's just destiny for us, but like when you first came out with it, I'm seeing it. And my younger son does not tolerate or didn't tolerate any kind of repetition. Mm-hmm. And I am consistent to a fault. So I'm like, okay, I have this worksheet for Monday yep. and, you know, and we're going to do it at this time. And so, and that's how my brain works. But his brain is like, I need something different every day. And so when it came to math, especially in the younger years, it was so hard because that's something that you have to, we think we have to drill yep. a lot of, and we have to memorize these things and stuff. And, you know, I would turn to game schooling, and I think it's probably your fault, or I'll give you the credit for it, whichever way you look at it. But the, you know, doing game schooling, and so we did math games. Well, I found mm-hmm. a bunch of card games online. There's a ton of resources. Back when EduSense was a thing.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I would
Is download. That not a thing anymore?
It's not a thing anymore. I actually had to go, when they were closing it down, I had to go and make sure that all of my files were downloaded. And so I had these like massive amounts of files. Yeah, but now there's like teachers pay teachers and there's other things now, but even Googling it, you know, mm-hmm. card games to teach math. And that's such a simple thing. There's, mm-hmm. What's it called? Magic School Bus. There's a math game for that. So we did a lot of those kinds of games. And really in those younger years, math is just something we need to be familiar with. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't have to be something that we are drilling and memorizing of facts. And it's so hard for me to convey that to other parents because it's so ingrained in us to do. But really, you know, when you have a kid like mine, he's just going to reject it. His brain is going to reject it and he's not going to learn it anyway. And, you know, there's a saying that, you know, teaching a child something when they're not ready to learn it is like throwing a marshmallow at your head and calling it eating.
Right.
It doesn't work. And so, mm-hmm. but, you know, when you look at the progression of math in particular, middle school and high school, you're always adding and subtracting and multiplying mm-hmm. and dividing. There's not a time in your mathematical careers that you're not doing those things. So mm-hmm. I sat back and I realized, why are we making them memorize these facts when they're little, when they're going to have to do it for forever? And so this mm-hmm. is going to be a repetition, whether we like it or not, in some way, shape, or form. So he, at mm-hmm. 5 and 6, he was writing algebraic equations on the board because that was how he was playing. Of course, I wasn't going to make him do it. And he was figuring out the answers. And so it was only on dates he was in the mood for that, of course. But, you know, and now he's actually having to do the algebraic equations and we have mm-hmm. resources available to us. If he's able to go find resources to help him find an answer, then they're there. There's not ever going to be a time in his life where he doesn't have resources of it. We live in a technological world now. Mm-hmm. And so no one's going to take calculators off of our phones. So,
right.
You know, it's always going to be there. So, I don't want to take away or ruin his love of learning by making him drill and do those things. So even game schooling, when it comes to that, you know, we play a ton of chess. We play a ton. Yeah. You know, I don't like games. It's not something that I do at all. It's how do you start game schooling? Let's say there's someone else out there that does not have games and they don't believe in games. They don't like games, but they're hearing mm-hmm. this and thinking, maybe I should try this with my kid that's rejecting our current way of learning. and they need to go buy some, but they're so expensive. So what are some, I mean, I already said, you know, you can find things on the internet, but what are some suggestions that you might have for someone in that situation?
So first of all, you mentioned math, and I know that's like almost 99% of the time when people are coming to me about game schooling, it's math. So in the early years, especially, any game you play has math built into it. You just don't tell your kids that. Every single, like, you can't name one that doesn't have some sort of math element. Just don't call it educational. Don't tell them they're doing math. When you have little kids, if you use scented markers and whiteboards and, you know, you can make the scorekeeper be kind of a cool status. Like, who wants to be scorekeeper? You get to use these things. And then they're doing math. Just don't tell them. But if you want to get started and you don't have any games, my biggest piece of advice is to get a deck of cards or two deck of cards, just standard that you get at CVS in the checkout line, and then go on the Bicycle Playing Cards website. You can search. They also have a free app called the How to Play app. You can search by number of players, and there's more filters, and you can search, and they have every single card game on there. We have the very first month that I opened Neverboard Learning, we love challenges because of people who play games like to be like gamify their game schooling. So we'll often have like a monthly challenge. And the one we did the first month was called the Card Game Bingo Challenge. And it was just, you know, like a bingo card. And it had the names of various card games. And then there was a link that you could click on that would take you to Bicycle and you could see how to play it. And I can't tell you, people still talk about that all the time and print it out and play it over and over, because they would come on and be like, Kate, we just played Spoons. Like, I just remember playing that with my great aunts and uncles, like in the 80s on their porch. Like, it gives you so much nostalgia to learn these games with each other. And it doesn't cost you anything. You know, a deck of cards is like a few bucks, and then you can play literally the whole year. Board Game Geek does a 10 by 10 challenge. Is it 10 by 10? Yes. Play 10 games 10 times during the year. They started every year in January. So this is a perfect time if you wanted to do that. And you could just take a deck of cards and you could just do card games and you would be good to go for the entire year. 10 card games 10 times. And that is a good way to start and get your feet wet. And then if you're thinking about purchasing board games or adding to your collection, I would recommend that you play with friends, see what you like. Board games are as varied as a bookstore. There are so many different types and genres. And I always tell people, there's a lot of parents out there who say that they don't like gaming. And I'll say, like, what did you play growing up? And they'll say Monopoly. And there are a lot of people who love Monopoly, but Monopoly has a lot of feeling. So if that's the only game you play, you think you don't like board games because of the, you know what I mean? Or it could be something else. For me, it was Battleship, nothing against it, but that was the only game that I could convince my siblings to play in hopes that I could like get them to play another thing. And they were so competitive that it wasn't a pleasurable experience. So, you know, for me, that's one that I never really like take out. I still have my childhood Battleship, but it's not something I would pull out and be like, hey, let's play this. My boys love it though, but I would just start. And then there's board game cafes that you can go to and test them out. You could, if you're in a homeschool group, you could do a game night or you could do game swap. A lot of libraries now are loaning games, which is great. So I would just really try to figure out what you like before you invest, because they are expensive. And then there are ways to save money on them. I have an article that I could share with you that's, I think it's called 100 games or something like that. But at the beginning of it, it has tips for ways to save money if you're trying to add some games to your collection. Goodwill, you know, thrift stores, you can almost always find games like, I call them the frequent flyers, like Yahtzee and Boggle and Scrabble. Those are great games and people call them old lady games, but I love them and they've got a lot of educational value. And usually, you know, somebody just never played it. Or you could reach out to extended family and say, hey, do you have any games that you don't play that are just collecting dust in your closet? We're going to start this thing in our homeschool. And people are more than happy to get rid of stuff that they're not using for a good cause. So there's a lot of ways to add without breaking the bank.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's awesome. I was thinking about something. Yeah. So when I was a kid, the games we played were poker and spades and sometimes hearts. So that was, I mean, I don't, my brothers, my dad really liked playing chess and he was really good at it. And my brothers played chess. I don't care enough to learn how to play chess, but all of the boys in my house know how to play it. And they're really, they're decent at it. They're, you know, they're fair at it, but It's not my jam, and there's too many rules, and there's too many things to know about which piece can go where, and I don't care enough to do it.
But I'm the same. That's so funny. I have no spatial skills, so if there's a game that's like this piece goes this,
right? Too much memorization. Yeah,
yeah. I used to do was it No Stress Chess? I used to play that with my boys, and then my boys started playing, and then they taught my daughter, and my husband plays, so they will all play together. And I used to feel really guilty that I didn't try harder to learn chess with them. But now that's the thing they do. That's the cool thing if you've been game schooling a while too, is that certain kids will have certain games that they play with each other. Like my my kids love to play chess together. My boys play at Memoir 44. My daughter and my youngest are constantly playing like silly games. They like the really, really goofy ones. So it's neat to see like those little relationships pop up where someone hates that game, but they'll play this one.
And right.
It becomes like part of their little like sibling story, I think.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Exploding Kittens is one that's popular. Yeah. Stratego was that was something I was going to talk about. So Stratego,
my youngest loves that.
We have a new version of Stratego. But when my uncle passed away in like 2011, he had a ton of puzzles and games and things. And so I was like, I'm taking these. Mm-hmm. They were from the 1960s. So I have a 1960s version of Stratego. And then I have like a 2000 something version of Stratego. And they're different. They're totally different. And so we'll play.
That is,
you know,
cool.
If we play Stratego, we'll do, well, which one do we want to do? We want to do the old one or do we want to do the new one? And it's really interesting. And we love that kind of strategy, or at least my youngest does. And he's good at doing the strategy games and it cracks him up. He just absolutely loves it. But
that was my husband's favorite game as a kid. He's not a huge gamer. So he does play with us, but we have to kind of convince him a lot of times. We unfortunately lost a piece to that. That is, I mean, I think that's a hard game in general to lose a piece to. And I forget what the name is, but it's something that you kind of need. So it's kind of ruined. And you can't fake a piece for Stratego. They would know that it was
well,
the guy
that's
that
true.
For bombs. Is that? I don't know. I should
there's a bomb. Yeah, there's a bomb on there.
Yeah, there's something.
The bomb is hidden. So if you had like a piece of cardboard in the stand,
I don't think
everybody would know.
Bomb. I think it was someone who gets the bomb. Is there somebody that can go like, I don't remember.
I don't know.
I don't know. It doesn't matter.
It's been a while.
I need to just get another one. It's not that, you know.
Right. It's not that deep. Now, if I lost a piece to the 1960s Stratego, we'd have a problem, I think.
Yeah.
But I've got several. There's like Upwards and Landslide. Tripoli. Have you ever played Tripoli?
No.
Me neither. But it's been in my closet for like 15 years. So
we just started playing Upwards again, though. That's been a while since we had played that one. That's another, like, I can always play Scrabble, but Upwards was fun.
Scrabble would be fun to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So you got classes on your website. I was looking at those this morning and I'm digging them. Do you want to talk about those at all?
Sure. So I have three digital courses, and the first one is called The Lazy Homeschooler's Guide to Unit Studies. And when you think about unit studies in your mind, what you're calling up right now, the like lap book with all the pieces, that's not what I do. It's what I called it ages ago. We called them lazy unit studies. And I would just take this was especially when my kids were younger. So the story that I always tell is my oldest was really into cuttlefish and Humboldt squids. And so I created, you know, this was very early on. He was the only one I was homeschooling. And I was like, I'm going to create, like, there's nothing out there on the Humboldt squid. So I will create a unit study on the Humboldt squid. And I like was so proud of myself. I went all like teacher mode. And then by the time it was ready, which wasn't too long, he still liked the Humboldt squid, but he was like really into Greek mythology. So he wanted nothing to do with the unit study. So what I learned to do with my kids was whatever they're interested in and that moment, like feed them little bits of things. So start with books and then, you know, read aloud to them and leave some books out on your coffee table and, you know, watch this document and just keep layering it on. And that way you didn't spend a ton of money. And if they move on, it doesn't matter. It's not this investment where you feel like you failed. So if your kid was really into sea life and you had all of these ideas in your mind, like I want to cover the zones of the ocean and the creatures of the deep and the oceans across the globe and all of this stuff, you didn't get to that. And you might feel like, you know, oh, crud, like they didn't learn all this important stuff that they're supposed to learn while they move on to this next thing. When you were doing it, when they were interested in it, and they are going to remember that in a way that they wouldn't remember it if you presented it in a science textbook because you learn about oceans in like grade three or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So I have found that you just following their interest in a way where you're being conscious about it, but also not spending a ton and not being upset if it doesn't go, you know, if they suddenly go this way and they want to do something else, you're prepared to do that. And they're just very easy ways to encourage that. And so I called those lazy unit studies. So I have a course on that. And then I have Game Schooling 101, which is all about starting game schooling and how to, what it is and how to do it and how not to do it and all the frequently asked questions and everything. And my third class is called How to Rock, the Most Important Part of Your Homeschool Day. And it's all about reading aloud to your children and teens, because that's important. I always say my first word was bookie. It actually was. I'm like a total book nerd. But reading aloud is the single most important thing you can do every single day in your homeschool. It covers any academic subject, any area you're worried about, any social sort of situation that's going on. And it's all about creating a routine. We call ours coffee and books. So it's always been first thing in the morning with coffee. They eat. I read them books. It's different this year because two are at school. But it's about creating a very simple, sustainable read aloud routine that is just like a no-brainer to you, that it just becomes such a habit and such an easy habit that you can do it, you know, through, you know, those crappy homeschool seasons that you have if you're moving or you've had a loss or there's a global pandemic or things like that. Like, you can still do this one thing and feel like, okay, I did that most important part of the day, like that is done, and just put a check in the column. So that's the third one.
Okay. Well, that sounds so awesome. So I've had such a good time listening to you, and we could just talk all day, but we should probably wrap this up. So how can our listeners find you and sign up and read about you and do all of the things?
Sure. So I am at mylittlepoppies.com. It's my-little-poppies. Is it hyphen or dash?
Either one.
I should have never done that. But if you search for My Little Poppies, it will come up. I am there, but where you can find me the most right now is at neverboardlearning.com, and it's board as in board games. And that's like my passion project right now. We're having a lot of fun teaching people how to incorporate play-based learning in across all ages. We have parents with littles who are homeschooling. We have kids who are in public school. We have grandparents that are doing after schooling, and we have veteran homeschoolers who have kids off at college, but still have a kid at home that are using, you know, with a younger kid who's now the only kid at home, game schooling as a way to connect while the bigs are off at college. So it's a really neat group of people. It's the most supportive place on the internet. And so that's my favorite place right now. It's not like Facebook.
Awesome. Right. That's awesome.
The opposite.
Yeah. Well, and of course with us, you know, we'll have all of your links and all of the things that we referenced in our show notes. And if listeners, of course, can always find us at goathomeschoolingpodcast.com. And thanks for listening. Thank you for being here, Kate.
Oh, it's been so much fun talking to you, Amanda.
Thanks for listening today. We hope you'll subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you'd like to suggest topics for us to discuss, or if you have any questions, find us at Goat Homeschooling on Facebook, on Instagram at Goat Homeschool, and email us at goathomeschoolingpodcast@gmail.com. Have a great day. Thanks for listening.